Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel Abraham, joined by David McDonald. Excuse the background noise. I'll start with my good news and bad news. Okay, the bad news is I've started recording at the exact moment when the housekeeping have come to our room to clean up. So I had to decide, do I want to have good sound quality for this podcast and a dirty room, or a clean room and shit audio quality? And I decided to go with the latter, Damon. But the good news being that hopefully in the next week or so, I should be out of this hotel and moved into my new apartment, where the sound quality will be slightly less shit. So that is my good news and bad news. David, do you want to share your good news with us first?
Sure. Let's do good news first. Good news is I was fighting a little bit to get a new job, and I got the offer Friday. So it looked good. I have Cheryl reading it over as well. And I would say 99% will be accepting that offer, and on we go. So that's good news there. The bad news is the Toronto Maple Leafs have once again unlubed their fist and jammed it square in my anus. And now they're doing card tricks. Yep, they're doing card tricks in my asshole. I cannot believe that team, that organization, and why I put myself through this every fucking year. Every fucking year. I got so drunk last night after they lost that I staggered into my house. It was like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. I ate, we made ribs. I got a new smoker. I got a new grill. Fantastic, right? A pellet smoker. Made ribs. They were wonderful. They were the best ribs ever made.
Congratulations. I feel like I should congratulate you on the new smoker. That's yes. Another piece of good news. You didn't tell me that off the air. What's going on?
I'm sorry, my bad. A lot going on. And then we fired it up. Fantastic. And then, so again, I had like a whole slab of ribs. It's like drunk eating them at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I passed out on the couch. And I woke up 15 minutes ago. There you go. I'm ready for you. I'm ready for some podcasting.
We had a lot of people were writing in, Damon, concerned about you and wanting your takes on this hockey situation. So I mentioned to you that Booze Leprechaun Nicole messaged and said he might want to do a wellness check on Damon, as the Leafs blew a 3-2 series lead to get
3-1
Stanley Cup. Oh, 3-1. Okay, well, that's even better. Daryl said, Damon, please give us a post-mortem of the Leafs playoff run. Last year, I compared them to Yoshihashi, but at least Yoshihashi has now won a championship in my lifetime. On reflection, I think they are more Master Watto tier.
It's amazing, because they are, like, when people think of hockey, in many cases, you think of the Toronto Maple Leafs, much like people might think of the New York Yankees when it comes to baseball, or the I don't know. You could even make an argument and say Manchester United. They have won nothing. I mean, again, that's not an exaggeration. They have not won a – I mean, there's three rounds of the playoffs before you go to the championship game. They haven't won a playoff series since 2007. They've lost consecutive game sevens. There was a game seven this year, obviously, where they blew a 3-1 lead. There was a game seven where they fought back in game six against Columbus, of all teams, and then shit the bed game seven. They had three against Boston where they could have won Easter Sunday at home. They could have put them away at home, but no, they fuck up that game, take it back to Boston, lose game seven. Every fucking year, I get my hopes up, and every fucking year, I fall for it. Every fucking year. It is just madness. But then come October, go Leafs go, and they'll have a great regular season and shit the bed in the playoffs. Joel, we brought in all these older players, little sandpaper in their game to toughen up the Leafs. You know, that was the big gripe. We strengthened their defense. We even got solid goaltending. Our first line did shit. Our big superstars did shit the series. And here's the thing, Joel, Montreal is not a great team. Not a great team. Not a great team. They lose. They lost last night. They didn't even put up a fight. 3-0 they lost. And I'm just despondent. I can't believe this is the team I picked. This is the team I picked. So, I should be used to it by now, Joel. It's the same old. I wish I could give you a wrestling analogy of it, but I really can't. Because if any pro wrestler performed so poorly in big spots, yet continually got those big spots, I'm kind of describing the 80s WWF. So, yeah. Unbelievable. All right, rant's over. I got it off my chest. Fuck me, right in the butthole.
Well, luckily you've got New Japan Wrestling to fall back on to cheer you up. Oh, going strong.
Jesus.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Smooth, yeah. Clear waters ahead, Damon. Nothing could possibly be going wrong.
Let's jump into that, being I'm already wound up a little bit. I guess that's our big news of the week, right?
Yeah, so we had a few people writing in about this amidst rumours that New Japan are in talks with WWE. WWE asking New Japan to be New Japan's exclusive Western partner. So Count Homer says, if the talks are true, do you think this represents a change in approach to WWE's Japanese expansion plans? We also saw Tony Khan cutting quite a passionate promo about the situation. Kaneki said, how do you all feel about New Japan giving Tony Khan the okay to cut the promo on Nick Khan and WWE? And Boo's writing in saying, if you're AEW Khan and looking at these reports of New Japan talking to WWE Khan and rethinking, are you rethinking your decision to partner up? No matter how this ends, isn't this just another notch on the New Japan is a shitty partner scoreboard? So what do you make of this mess, Damon?
Well, there's a lot to unpack, sure. There is the fact that WWE and WWF and Titan Sports and whatever you want to call them, they've had working relationships with New Japan Pro Wrestling, but I will say many times in the past, especially in the 80s, they worked together. Again, different time, different space, different companies. I get it. But even as recently as, you know, our what we'll call our modern New Japan Pro Wrestling, it feels like there's always been talks and with all different promotions. And I had said that, you know, when you look at your balance sheets and you don't have a lot of money coming in, you're going to get into bed with people that you may not have before. That's just the cold facts. I don't know how serious those talks were. I don't know how concrete they are or what plans have been laid down. I don't think it's that. Here's what I find weird. The fact that it got to Dave, right? So Dave was the first one on this. And the fact that that it did leads me to believe two things. And again, I have no proof of anything, but it leads me to believe, A, it is some kind of testing the waters, right, dipping their toes in, and it's gotten to the point where it's the toes are deep enough that Dave gets wind of it, right? Because they've talked before, recently, like, you know, before, right? And when I say, like, 3 or 4 years ago, they've talked. So, again, for Dave to get wind of it, it might be a little bit more fire to the smoke. But the second thing is that it doesn't really feel like anything came about of it, right? Nothing's really concrete. There's no plans. We just know that there was a meeting. Okay, what the fuck does that mean? We don't know if that means talent exchange. We don't know if that means exclusive partnership. We don't know. I mean, they speculated.
Yes, sorry to jump in. Were you going to mention about the Daniel Bryan thing? Because the news trickled out after that that it was specific discussions were made about the possibility of Daniel Bryan being able to work New Japan.
Okay. All right. I mean, look, WWE is not the easiest company to work for. And for a lot of these partnerships, and I put in air quotes, and you can probably count on one hand how many WWE has had in the past 10 years, they're usually on the side of Vince. And they usually are there to promote his guys. That's my biggest fear with this supposed partnership, is that I don't see how New Japan comes out of this looking good in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, the historic precedent is there that rather than Vince using this as a productive platform to promote his product, usually with him, the playbook is it's to cut someone else off at the knees, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So whether that is to, you know, finally get the foothold in Japan for starting NXT Japan or whatever it is, and could be to hurt AEW, because, you know, we've started to see the partnership beginning to show signs of life between them and New Japan. But just looking at the companies that WWE have worked with in the past, at the end of things, they don't look very healthy. I mean, I'm just thinking of the Britrest scene when WWE started to sink their hooks into that. The scene is pretty much barren at the moment, and, you know, part of that is down for, you know, the scandals and COVID and everything, but even before then they just hoovered up all the talent. So I think there are plenty of reasons to be apprehensive if such a deal does go ahead, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's I mean aside from maybe bigger paydays and the possibility of being a bigger star, I mean, maybe they're all looking at like Shinsuke, or they're looking at AJ, and they're saying, you know, he seems to be doing all right for himself. Maybe that could be me. You know, I'm sure he's making a lot more money than what he made in Japan. So there's incentive there. I think, again, the company has to start for 2 years. They've struggled to put money in their pockets. It's not good. So yeah, they're gonna explore every avenue. Am I interested in that avenue? Absolutely not. I can honestly say that my interest in New Japan Pro Wrestling would be near death if there was Roman Reigns on my TV show. If there was, I don't know, pick somebody. I couldn't even tell you who's on. Braun Strowman, or The Fiend, or The Great. I don't even know his name.
Can I just sort of unpick that a bit, Damon? I'm not saying I disagree with you, but what is it specifically that would cause you to lose interest? Because, I mean, if you look at the WWE roster, they have got hordes of talent there. Like, you could pick so many names that if you sent them over to New Japan to have a New Japan-style match, where, you know, free from the Vince house style, you get tremendous results. You know, I personally, you know, wrestlers like Cesaro or Akira Tozawa, Walter, Keith Lee, Pete Dunne, people like that. But we don't know what this partnership would look like. So what would be your fears there? What do you think this partnership would look like that would cause you to have very little interest in it?
the watering down of New Japan Pro Wrestling matches, talent, show, the overproduction that WWE brings to the table. Not having those matches that you described, right, with specific people that you mentioned, and not working in a New Japan style. Just because you're in a New Japan ring and you got WWE guys doesn't mean that these guys just flick a switch and now they turn into fucking Will Ospreay.
Okay, so sorry, just to clarify, you think the power dynamics of this relationship would be such that, let's say there is a joint promoted show in Japan, you think all those facets of WWE production, you know, the TV style, the match style, all of that, you think would infiltrate and dominate the presentation of such a show?
Here's the thing, you see evidence of that already. Like, WWF had these super shows with, was it SWS? And aside from maybe one match, all these matches were pretty much WWF style. And again, that was in the 90s. I just don't see, like, I don't know if these guys can just turn on a switch and work a New Japan style. And I'll go so far as to say this. If you're a New Japan guy and you have the opportunity to work, and I put in air quotes, the safe WWE style, right? And again, there are air quotes there. At least on paper, doesn't that seem a little bit better than, you know, your Tanahashi? I might want to work that WWE style.
Yeah, I could see that. I just think it's just this fear of the unknown that we have no idea what it would look like, what the terms it would be. So we're just, you know, flying blind here. You know, it's just complete speculation at this point. We haven't heard anything, so we can't illuminate this situation at all. Do you think this could just be deliberately leaked by New Japan to try to leverage a better deal with AEW?
Possibly, right? Why not? Why? I mean, if they have the opportunity to do that, sure, of course. I don't know. I mean, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I can't imagine WWE and a New Japan partnership in any facet, in any way. Like, I don't know. I just don't see that happening. Here's the thing. How does New Japan benefit from this? Like, from a New Japan-only point of view, how do they benefit from this? It's not like, what, that they're on Raw or SmackDown? Is that it?
Because I could see the upside for the casual WWE viewer who has heard this sort of mythical New Japan, and then, you know, they're watching Monday Night Raw, and this will be their first time seeing, you know, for example, an Okada or a Tanahashi. So, for, you know, that could be reaching a lot of new viewers who have maybe heard these names before but never seen them in the flesh. And likewise, I was chatting to Manabu about this, and he says that WWE is not really popular in Japan, but the prospect of getting the likes of Nakamura and AJ Styles and Prince Devitt would be a big deal for New Japan fans. You know, getting matches or rematches like Naito versus Nakamura, Devitt versus Jay White, or AJ versus Ospreay, or Daniel Bryan versus Zack Sabre Jr., things like that. Even like Kenta Nakamura, Manabu said, he thinks would be a dream match, and there'd be interest in that from Japanese New Japan fans. So I can see what the appeal would be. Not for us, you know, for us hardcore fans, we know what WWE is, and, you know, it's not our cup of tea. And we've seen the lessons from history about how things like this tend to end badly. But for more casual fans, do you not think that there would be some room for growth there?
That we now have new Japan Pro Wrestling fans? Because my point being is this, is that it's not like we're in the 90s and we have to trade tapes to get these shows. And, you know, you can YouTube any one of those wrestlers that you mentioned if you had any interest in seeing them. You know? Like, I find it hard to believe that if anyone had even...
People are lazy, Damon. You know, there's a... Actually... I know it doesn't sound like much, but the difference between it appearing on the Monday Night Raw that you're watching anyway, and then actually going out of your way to search this stuff and watch it on YouTube is a step too far for a lot of viewers.
That's true. I don't know. I just think that the people that would want to see it have plenty of access to it. I don't think it would move New Japan's needle. I really don't. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be dead wrong, but I think if you're a fan of WWE, you don't give a shit about New Japan. If you're a fan of WWE, you might like Bullet Club. I know I'm being very general here in describing fandom, but I just don't think a person who tunes in on Monday night religiously gives a flying fuck about New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I know on the other side of the spectrum that many people who are passionate about New Japan Pro Wrestling have become passionate about New Japan Pro Wrestling because they can't stand the WWE and the product they put out. Can't stand it. They want anything to do with it. So, if the money's right and the exposure's right, and again, Vince doesn't have the best track history of this, but okay. I mean, what are you going to do? I don't think it happens, though. I just think it's too much oil and water. I really do. I just can't see how that gets done. I can't see how that gets done. I feel like there's a lot of red tape that would have to be cut, and I don't think it gets cut.
Okay, Damon, I'm going to just pause. Well, not pause. I mean, I'm going to keep recording, but they're hoovering at the moment. It shouldn't be too long, like maybe a couple of minutes, but I think that that might be a step too far. So I'll just, let me write this down for Dan. So hold on. So edits around 22 mins. And there was also one near the start, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I can't remember what time it was though. What I will talk about next is Manabu was telling me some stuff about the Wrestle Summit in the 90s. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay, because do you think that's worth touching on about? Because when WWF and All Japan and New Japan did their Tokyo Dome show and how that panned out, do you think that'd be interesting?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing with that. They had, I think, who was on that show from a WWE? I think Ted DiBiase was on there. I think Rick Martel was on there. I think Hogan was on there. They brought over guys that had somewhat of a name in Japan. But they really didn't work Japanese-style matches, it felt like. It didn't feel like it to me. Like, what was the show? Do you have the lineup in front of you?
Yeah, so I'll just go from the top. So Hulk Hogan against Stan Hansen, Andre the Giant and Giant Baba against Demolition, Warrior against Ted DiBiase, Tenryu against Randy Savage, Jumbo Tsuruta and King Haku against Mr. Perfect and Rick Martel, Masa Saito and Shinya Hashimoto against Chono and Choshu, Jake Roberts against Big Boss Man.
All right.
Great. Yeah.
All right. I mean, these are, these matches are WWF house show matches, right? They tried to put two guys in there that had talent, but they kept all the WWE guys together. You had Baba and fucking Andre barely walking in the ring and Demolition having the bump all over the place for them. Hogan and Hansen wasn't a bad match, but it's not super. It's not. Hogan does his drop toe hold to show his wrestling skill in Japan. That's about it. Yeah. And again, that show was in the 90s. Could things be much different? Of course. But do you think that there's going to be a lot of if there were interpromotional matches, which I can't say there will be, I don't know. I think you're going to see more. I think the allure of this would have to be interpromotional matches. Because who gives a shit if, again, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman wrestling in Cork and Hall. You know what I mean? Like, who would give a shit?
Now, of course, this isn't the first time, Damon, that New Japan and WWE, or WWF as it was back then, have done business together. And again, Manabu was really helpful in giving some historical context to the Wrestle Summit, which was in 1990. So around that time, Manabu educates me. It was a strange era. So New Japan was not the most popular promotion. Neither was All Japan. It was UWF. So this WWE, New Japan, All Japan Wrestling Summit wasn't like the biggest promotions in Japan presenting. Apparently it was UWF back then. So fans at that time were thinking that pro wrestling's fake. UWF was real. So we ended up having this show with Vince, basically trying to cultivate a Japanese market, visiting Japan, hiring Akio Sato, who's the former All Japan booker, to help that business. He had connections to Baba and Sakaguchi. So then this super show happens. So New Japan were sort of helping with the show. They provided two of their own matches, but it was mainly Baba doing the matchmaking. Main event was supposed to be Hulk Hogan versus Terry Gordy, because Vince wanted to put Hulk Hogan versus the number one foreign wrestler in Japan on the main event of this show. But Baba wanted to protect Hansen. So he said Gordy was the number one foreign wrestler to Vince. So Hogan versus Gordy was announced once and printed on the program. But then Akio Sato told Vince that Gordy wasn't the number one. It was definitely Hansen. So the car was just swapped a few days before the show. And after the show, funnily enough, New Japan decided to choose WCW as their partner rather than WWF. All Japan lost lots of wrestlers because of SWS. That was Tenryu's new promotion. So then the following year, we had WWF working with SWS in the Tokyo Dome, and then New Japan working Tokyo Dome shows with WCW. So Manabu was actually at both of those shows. So it's really interesting picking his brains to find out what that was like. So there is a precedence here for Vince trying to working with New Japan and trying to get a foothold in the market in Japan, and it was not really successful.
No, it hasn't, and it hasn't been since. It's they still do tours. They would do tours. Oddly enough, they would do it like July 4th, in Japan. It seemed like every July 4th they were there. And they would get okay crowds for the shows, but they were just like one-off, you know, two shows. Not a big deal. I like the idea of super shows. I got no problem with a super show. I like a super show. I don't need to see us on Raw. You know, I don't mind giving guys places to work. Right, they got a very large roster. If there are guys that want to do a tour of Japan, do World Tag League, do, I got no problem with that. If they're solid guys, and I don't think that New Japan would be like, oh, you got me, Randy Orton, thanks. I think they're going to have plenty of say in who they have and who they don't have. So we'll see. I mean, they've talked before. That they have a long history of it. We would just went over it. So it's not that shocking that they're talking. But again, how far they are talking and what will come of this, who knows. I don't like it. The history shows that it's not good. But we'll see what happens.
I mean, I do think long-term AEW is the more viable option. I mean, we're seeing signs of that. Like, for example, Ren Narita winning on his AEW Elevation debut against Royce Isaac. So now we've got AEW as a viable excursion destination. So I do think that's where we'll see the partnership. I don't think this WWE thing will amount to anything. Again, that's not based on any insider knowledge. It's just like you. I feel that this one's a non-starter just because of this.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
the huge stylistic differences between the companies. But I mean, in spite of that, we are seeing wrestlers that we talked about last week from New Japan coming over to the States. And one huge piece of news, Dame, that we haven't talked about yet was Satoshi Kojima expressing his love for Panda Express. Did you see his Instagram post about that?
Did I see that? No, I didn't. He likes the Panda Express, huh? I don't think I've ever had it.
Oh. No. Well, I was going to ask what it was like, because Koji seems all on board with it. And what tickled me about this, Damon, was the post was in Japanese, and then I hit the translate function on Instagram, which, as you know, it's not always the most reliable. So this was the translation of what he wrote. When I'm staying in Los Angeles, I have a very favorite meal. It's a Chinese dish called Panda Express. In a lot of wank, I'm going to choose what I like and put it in. This is really super delicious, and I ate it almost every day. If you eat too much, you'll get fat. So people want to know, Dave. And Jaguar Juice says, do you think that the roster unrest could be partially quelled by sending other roster members to get a wank special? Louis says, how much do you think a wank special is at Panda Express? But yeah, I can't believe you've never eaten there, Damon. Are you a fan of Chinese food?
I do. I do enjoy it. I don't think there's one around me. The only one I've ever seen is like in the airport, maybe. Yeah. No, I've never had it. I mean, what's the go-to dish for Panda Express besides the wank?
I don't know. I've never tried it myself. That's why I wanted to ask you, because I may have said this on the show before. I don't know. But my hot take, well, you know, it's just my personal preference. But having lived in China for 4.5 years, I prefer Western Chinese food than authentic Chinese food. So it's a lot sweeter. I just find authentic Chinese foods tended to be very oily. And just not to my taste. So I'm very happy. I found a place in Bangkok actually that does really good sort of Western style Chinese takeaway, sweet and sour chicken balls and chop suey, is that what you call it in the States?
Yeah,
I had some of that was really good. General Tso's chicken
yeah,
Mongolian beef.
Yeah.
Crab rangoo, things of that nature.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sure. You went all in on the American.
This was not one order. This was several orders, but it's very good comfort food. So enjoy yourself, Satoshi. Don't eat too much because you've got some strong dates coming up. You've got to be on your game for that one. But there we go. We're seeing more cooperation, at least on the transatlantic, or no, it would be Pacific, wouldn't it? The trans-Pacific front, yeah. All right, so we do have some big matches coming up this week in New Japan, in Japan. So as we're speaking, Damon, I'm watching the Road to Dominion show, which will be main evented by IWGP tag team match, title match between Gorillas of Destiny and Dangerous Techers, Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. So by the time you're listening to this, it will be over. But are you going to check this one out, Damon? What are your thoughts, your expectations for this match? Do you think the title's going to change hands? Do you think it'll be a good match? Or what are you feeling?
Oh, I think it definitely will be a good match. This is not a horrific show. Even the multi-man tag match isn't bad. What do you got? Okada, Goto, Ishii, Yoshihashi against Bushi, Sanada, Naito, and Shingo. That's not bad. I mean, you know. And then, main event, semi-main event, aren't bad. I'll definitely watch. You know, I'm not going to go. If everybody says it's great, I'll watch it this morning. If not, I'll watch it tonight.
Do you think we're going to get a title change? And get listeners with the benefit of you over there in the future. You will know what the result is. But let's see if Damon and I are right. Do you think we're going to have new tag team champions?
This is what? Their third title defense? Let's do it. New champions. We will see a change.
And then tomorrow, Wednesday, June the 2nd, also at Korakuen Hall, we will have a main event with our beloved Never Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship, which will be defended by Yoshihashi, Tomohiro Ishii, Hiroki Goto, against the challengers of Bushi, Sanada, and Tetsuya Naito. David, I'm really looking forward to this. I think this will be great.
Every time they dust off those belts, they get a little fresh matchup. Makes things exciting. I don't know why, man. I don't know why they don't see this. And maybe the specialness of it is the fact that they constantly do something good and then just hold off and then give you, you know, you, it makes you long for it a little bit. And I guess if you saw it all the time, it may not be as special. But, yeah, when they do this, it's usually, these are usually good matches, fun matches, and a lot of times steal the show. So I don't understand why they don't do this more.
This is an interesting one because I could easily see that Bushi-Sanada-Naito team winning. And, of course, Bushi and Sanada have held those belts before for a very, very long time. Do you think Naito being a six-man champion would be a bad look for him?
Do I think Naito and the six-man doing what now? I'm sorry.
Do you think Naito holding the six-man championship would be a bad look for him? Although, I mean, having said that, we've had, you know, people like Kenny Omega holding that belt in the past, so...
We've had him. I mean, that there's been names that have held that belt. Tanahashi's held that belt. Who else has held that belt? Yano, the Briscoes. You know, I don't think it's a step down. It's just a. It's just something to do. Just something for him to carry. It's fine.
Do you think they're going to win?
No, I don't. I don't. Here's the thing. I don't think they need those titles. Like they, I think they have bigger fish to fry. But the guys that are holding it now, I mean, they're perfect for that. You know, it gives those guys who perpetually have nothing to do something to do. Whereas Naito is always in another program, and Shingo definitely is in other programs. So only odd man out is Bushi, and who gives a fuck about Bushi, right?
Yeah, I would be quite sad actually if Chaos lost these belts. Because, like you, I agree. I think it's a great spot for them. I love seeing every time they defend them on these Korakuen shows. It's always good fun. And I get to have a showcase for Yoshihashi. And he always puts his all into that. So, yeah, looking forward to this one. It should be a good one. And then for Dominion, 6-6, which is taking place on 6-7. They moved it to Monday, June the 7th. I believe that's to get around certain restrictions. In Osaka-jo Hall, we only have three matches announced so far. So the first match I'd like your thoughts on is a special singles match between Kota Ibushi and Jeff Cobb, which I think has been built up really well. We've seen Jeff Cobb doing his own version of Ibushi's move. He's done the Kobigoe, and Ibushi was selling that tremendously. In his post-match promo, he was rolling down the stairs, you know, completely out of it. So I think Ibushi's done a really fantastic job in making Cobb look dangerous and a really threatening challenger for him. And... having said that, Cobb has got a match lined up on June the 19th against Sam Adonis in the States. So we're not expecting him to be sticking around in Japan. So to me, that might be kind of tipping their hand a bit towards an Ibushi win, maybe heating him up for something. So what are your expectations going into Cobb versus Ibushi?
I'm looking forward to the match, and you're right. I think they have done a decent job of building this up. Yeah, given that news, I think you're looking at Kota picking up a win, getting some shine back. You know, we're coming into some important shows. You know, we're going into
summer struggle. I think, you know, maybe an Ibushi win would set him up as a potential title challenger for summer struggle. Maybe,
possibly. I mean, I think I don't have any problem with him challenging for any of the titles. So, yeah, I think we're good. Looking at this show though. And the lineup that's already announced. And correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't it confirmed that El Desperado had the COVID-19? He had it pretty seriously, correct?
He did, yeah. He put out a series of tweets, and the translate function showed that he had a really, really rough time with it. So I would recommend you check those out. I'm not going to repeat them all here, but he had a very, very shit time with the old COVID-19. And... I'm going to tag on a question with that, actually, because Classic Catch asked us, considering half the roster has COVID and what we know about After Effects with regards to cardio, do you think New Japan could have to shorten some of their matches? And yeah, I'm a bit concerned about this match and Despy.
Yeah. I mean, they're expected to go at least 20, I would think, right? I mean, that's the normal junior heavyweight championship wheelhouse time frame. How's the cardio? How's the wind? How's he feeling? Can he go that much? this is a perfect example that you don't have to go that long if you can't go.
Yo as well. I mean, it's not been confirmed that he had COVID, but he was in that group of people who were missing from a few shows. So I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that he might have been suffering as well. So yeah, big question marks over this one. But I hope
And then the main event. Didn't Okada have it?
Yeah, he did. He confirmed it.
So I don't know. I don't know how serious it was for him, but you know he's going to have to do his 35-minute special, right?
So are you suggesting, Damon, that Kazuchika Okada is going to work this main event at a relatively slow pace and be locking on chin locks and money clips and things like that? Because I can't imagine that, Damon. This is ludicrous.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. First match back. Who knows what kind of physical condition, stamina. I mean, again, I'm sure he's going to get some of this with the six man. Maybe he'll test his cardio there a little bit. But yeah, he's going to be expected to go 30 some minutes. Again, I don't know how bad he was impacted by this. So, like going through that card, I'm watching this show. Unfortunately, I'm watching it to see how guys get through the show and to see how they fare and if they look the same and perform the same. That's what I'm looking at on these shows, because I think that's a big, important, vital factor of this.
Go back to the booking. Sarah says, what are your thoughts on Ibushi not being in the match to crown the vacant champion? I mean, personally, I think both Shingo and Okada have got a decent claim, with Okada being the last person to beat Will Ospreay, and then Shingo having a win over Okada in the New Japan Cup. I don't have any problems with that matchmaking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of happy that they went with the most direct method, right? These two guys, it makes the most sense, have a match instead of, some three-way or, what I mean? They went with the most direct route, and I think that was the smartest move.
And in terms of the let's just quickly touch on the junior match. So do you think there will be a title change there? I can't see it. I don't think Yo is ready to be junior champion.
I can't see it either. I can't. I would give it, on a scale of 1 to 100, I would say 20.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. And for Okada versus Shingo, Bash says 99%. Probably will think Okada will win the world title, but with the performances Shingo has put on and the history of a new generation holding the belt, do you think Shingo should deserve a run with it now, or do you think it should be carried on through for Shingo to get to the G1 and maybe win it and win at the Dome? And Ashutosh says, the most important one, who should win, Okada versus Shingo, and how long would you have whoever wins it hold the title? I think it's going to be an Okada win here. I think all the booking was pointing towards him beating Will Ospreay and getting the title back. It's not maybe the most sexy option, but it's the safest option at this point. And I can see Okada holding that title probably all the way to Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, when we would sit here and kind of map it out as best as we could, that was the path we were taking. So you can still take that same path. It's just, unfortunately, you're missing out on Will Ospreay and Okada match. But nobody's complaining about Shingo and Okada. That's for fucking sure. I'm sure it'll be great. But yeah, I think Okada wins this title, and away we go through the summer and into Wrestle Kingdom. Yep, I think it's where we got to meet.
Something that I think it was John Carroll discussing this, one of the possible benefits of having this new IWGP World Heavyweight Championship was the fact that now the only two people that have held it are Ibushi and Ospreay. And you could have told that story of Okada, a multi-time record-breaking IWGP heavyweight champion, but him always never won the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And that could be, a little wrinkle to his story that he wants to win this new title. He's never held it before, and that could be something for him to chase. Do you think, do you have any misgivings about him immediately winning it on Monday?
No, I don't. I'll be honest here too. I mean, I don't even think, I wouldn't even be upset if Shingo won. I really wouldn't. I nothing would surprise me at this point. I I want Okada to win. I think we need stability. I think we need that face. He knows how to conduct himself as a champion. And I think the company needs that. I think everybody's, as much as people sometimes complain about Okada being samesies, now you want a little samesy. We don't want to try to create a new star now. It's pointless. We got to steady the boat. So, I feel comfortable with it. Let's put it that way.
I also don't really like this idea of a guy deserving the title. You know, what does that mean? You know, a lot of people says, oh, you know, Ishii deserves the title because he's worked really hard, or Suzuki deserves the title. I think, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into deciding who should be your champion. And yeah, the word deserve, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, we all appreciate guys like that. And I don't know. I mean, they gave the fucking title to Evil, so I think everything's off the table at this point, but...
Yes, good point.
You know? But, yeah, I mean, if we're trying to do this for real, there's plenty of reasons why you don't give the belt to an Ishii or whomever. And you know what? I gotta be honest with you, it doesn't even have anything to do with the fucking fact that he can't cut a promo, apparently. I just don't think he's a guy to be, like, he's conditioned to be a mid-carder. Well, you know, he's a mid-card guy that will challenge for a title every once in a while and come up short. There's lots of guys like that. It's okay. Everybody doesn't have to win the fucking title.
Let's move on to my favorite part of the podcast, which is discussing New Japan Strong, my favorite wrestling show in the whole world. So we had a Collision on Friday, May the 28th. We open up with Clark Connors defeating AJZ in 9 minutes 38 seconds with his spear, which he's calling the trophy kill. I really enjoyed this match. I think these are two very talented young wrestlers. Clark Connors is really, I think, bringing that energy of a wild rhinoceros. Even his moveset is reminiscent of this charging beast, you know, flinging his opponent around. And he's got this simmering intensity to him that, to me, it really, really jumps off the screen. And you know, I'm very curious as to see where he is 12 months from now, because I would hope to see big things from Clark Connors in his future. And AJC, and I talked about him before on this podcast, he's continued to impress me. He's just an inherently hateable man. He's got a punchable face. He's got that big Easter Island statue jaw. He's got his trunks that are like two sizes too small for him. The way he licks his lips and slithers around the ring is just an extremely dirty boy, which is a good thing. And, you know, the in-ring is all there. He's got the fundamentals down. I feel that he could work on top in a compelling way. And I imagine he could work a crowd if there were a crowd there. He mixes all that up with some nice flashy moves. He's got his springboard DDT, the pop-up punch. AJZ, I would say remember the name, because I think this guy's got all the tools to be a success.
The pop-up punch is really... I mean, that's a thing of beauty. That is really well done when he does that. Yeah, look... We talked about not making new stars, and we can't make new stars. And you know what? You could take that theory and shove it right up my ass, because on this show you can, and they do. Again, my biggest fear is that you. I mean, look, I don't know what the story is with Lio Rush, and AEW and all that, and maybe they can work both spots. Who knows? But I just don't want this to be a showcase where guys look good and look strong and are just used as, like, you know, a farm system for somebody else.
Well, the Observer said that Lio Rush has signed full-time. Well, I don't full-time, but it said he signed with New Japan, which I was quite pleasantly surprised with.
Oh, I did not see that. Is that true?
Yeah, according to the Observer, yeah, he's a New Japan guy now, which,
okay,
if true...
That's good news. All right. Well, again, I just don't want guys like us to lose out on guys like this, because this is where the future is. And I would hate to see these guys get cherry picked and go off to other places.
And the second match on this show was El Fantasmo defeating Wheeler Yuta in 14 minutes, 6 seconds with a sudden death super kick. So Wheeler Yuta, again, another young guy who I think has got a lot of upsides. I like El Fantasma. He's grown on me. It's fun to see him in small doses like this. You know, when he's like your annoying big brother, and just little things make me laugh about him, and tripping over the cameraman and getting all annoyed. Him mucking around with the 20 count, running back to the ring in slow motion. I thought that was quite funny. Willie Uta, I mean, aesthetically, I may have said it before, he reminds me a bit of like a 2015 Will Ospreay. He's got a similar frame, similar energy to him. He's got quite a unique moveset. I like him a lot. I think he got a little bit of shine here, even though it was a fairly routine win for El Fantasma. But even so, if I were New Japan, I would want to keep Willie Uta around.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I mean, what, is he in his 20s? Yeah, he's got plenty more to grow, fill out, learn. Yeah. Again, that's my biggest fear, is watching these guys and thinking, they got to hang on to him. They got to hang on to him. And I don't know what they get paid per show or anything, but I'm sure all of them are fighting for dojo spots and contracts. But yeah, they gotta find a way to lock them down. They really do.
Yeah, those would be two guys I want to lock down. AJZ, Willie Uter, I think, yeah, a lot of potential for the future there. And then our main event was the Strong Openweight Championship match with Tom Lawler defeating Chris Dickinson in 21 minutes, 16 seconds via a sleeper suplex. So, well, first of all, I want to plug Keeping It Strong Style. They did a tremendous interview with Chris Dickinson that I'd recommend everyone to check out. And I love this match. It had a MMA feel to it. You could really see a match like this fitting right in with, you know, like a mid-90s UWFI show. And I like stuff like the dueling leg locks at the start, the feeling out striking exchanges where they're like trying to find their range. Chris Dickinson's kicks are really good. I like to, he's getting the advantage with the kicks, and then Tom Lawler just shoots for the takedown straight away because he knows he's in trouble. And you don't often see matches of this style in New Japan, so they really stand out when you do get them. I like having Danny Limelight, JR Kratos ringside talking shit. I could have done without them getting involved in the match, but to be fair, it was more of a setup for Brody King to appear rather than having a decisive effect on the match. So I'll allow it just this once. I did love seeing Chris Dickinson getting fired up down the stretch and just start suplexing Lawler. And that led to some really creative counters. I really enjoyed the way that they sprinkled the submission work throughout the match in an authentic way. I thought the striking was very good. We had chops, we had forearms, leg kicks. But the one thing that I really like about Tom Lawler is the way that he uses traditional wrestling moves like a suplex or an air raid crash or whatever as a setup to transition into a submission like a guillotine or a rear naked choke, because you never feel like Lawler is a former MMA guy trying to force himself to be a wrestler, which you do with some people making that transition, but not with Lawler. I think he's done a really masterful job at blurring those lines and presenting himself as a legit high-level wrestler who's seamlessly blending in his submission chops to elevate himself above all the competition. Like the way he chains those submissions together is really fun to watch, because it breaks up the usual pacing of a pro wrestling match, because as a pro wrestling fan, like, I'm conditioned to seeing a high impact move, you know, big slam followed by a little lull. You know, you get these dramatic peaks and troughs in a wrestling match, but Lawler plays with that format. He keeps you guessing by working in those submission attempts. And the brilliant thing is, by not having the fact that he doesn't have a singular finishing move like most wrestlers, you're expecting that tap out at any point. Every time he locked on a submission move down the stretch, I thought, oh, well, this is it. So, you know, it could be a heel hook or a knee bar or a choke. And it means I'm constantly engaged with the match rather than having this, you know, almost Pavlovian conditioning to tune out and tune in when I see particular dramatic cues. And, you know, I'm sitting there expecting a tap out, and then he wins with a sleeper suplex, which was brilliant. I thought this was terrific, Damon. How did you like it?
I really liked it a lot, too. I like the fact that the main events feel different. From everything else on the show. Like, it just has a different feel. And it almost gives that, and I hate when people say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. Like, even on a show like Strong, like, these matches kind of feel like a mini big fight feel. Right? Does that make any sense? Like, they feel a little more special. Just by the way that they present not only Lawler, but even Chris Dickinson. And the match structure and everything else. Some of those suplexes were pretty fucking great, weren't they? They were really fucking great. And the striking's good. I like the style. Like, I just like that hard-hitting style that, again, incorporates pro wrestling, but a little bit more snug, and I like that. I like that a lot. I thought the match was good. I'm glad we didn't see a title change. I think that was the right call. I don't want this belt to be flip floppy. When it definitely could be, you know, there's no reason why it couldn't be. But I like the fact that they're sticking with one guy for a little bit. Best show on TV, man. Best fucking wrestling show on TV.
And then post-match, we had Carl Fredericks coming out, making the challenge to Tom Lawler with the Gekiyoshikun sponge, which was fun. I hope he doesn't start using that as a weapon in the matches. I'm sure he won't. But you're not actually seeing this. It made me want to see Minoru Suzuki fly over for a taping, because I know he's wrestled Tom Lawler before. You know, he was supposed to wrestle Chris Dickinson at Bloodsport last year. It didn't end up happening, I think. So I think that would be a really interesting guy to bring over to do some work in the States and get his COVID jab. So... yeah. That is all our wrestling news for this week. Maybe we'll do a few questions before we go. Vase Collector says, would an all Mexican faction work in New Japan, or for New Japan fans, think La Sombra, Ryu Lee, and a few others feuding with LIJ?
Sure. Why not? That sounds fine. And I wouldn't have a problem with any of those guys rolling in for a little bit. A little feud there. Yeah. Well, what would be the problem with that?
And moreover, Hun, can you turn it off, please? Because it's noisy. I know you're hot, but I'm nearly done. I promise you. Thank you. You can start selling the delicious Mexican food at Korakuen Hall when they do appear. So there you go. You added advantages to that. Oh, Miho Abe's back.
What?
Breaking news here. She's back. She is on her knees. She is literally weeping with joy at getting to be back by Tai Chi's side.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, three more questions then. Bash says, if Daniel Ek does eventually buy Arsenal, does he pay the players 1.001p per game like he does artists on Spotify, literally building his wealth off the back of other people's art? Well, yes, there is no ethical consumption under capitalism, and there are no good billionaires. So, trading one evil billionaire owner for another does not move me at all. Sarah says, recently rewatched Shibata versus Okada, and it's still amazing. Was a relatively new fan when the match originally happened, and this was the match that sold me on him. Can you recommend me other great Shibata matches? I think I talked on the show a couple of months ago about Shibata versus Honma I think it was in the G1, but that was a tremendous one. Have you got any favorite Shibata? Oh, one more. Shibata against Goto at Wrestle Kingdom 11. Love that as well.
Yep, that's great. Shibata and Ishii. It was I want to say 2014 G1. That is a match where from the minute the bell rings, they just charge at each other and kill each other. again, you can imagine Shibata and Ishii. So look that one up. That is a good one as well. So, plenty there to wet your palate.
All right, let's, knock it on the head there. So I want to give a thank you also to people who've thrown us some money. So PD and Daryl, we thank you. We appreciate you. We appreciate your generosity. And if anyone else wants to, throw us some cash, redcircle.com/shows/super-j-cast is the place to do it. Discord link is in the show notes. If you want to buy one of our t-shirts, at Cobra Kawaii and prowrestlingtees.com/superjcast. Thank you to editor Dan. Find him on Twitter at lousyhero219. Subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network for other great shows. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at superjcast. Thank you everyone for listening, and goodbye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.